Beast OCR proudly presents BeastNet Podcast, sponsored in part by GH Under's performance-based layers and supported by the OCR community. Here we discuss all things OCR related. Welcome to BeastNet.
Hey everybody, it's Mike here with BeastNet. I've got Taylor Overmiller with me and we're going to just talk about stuff. So how you doing, Taylor?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. So you're over, where are you at? You're not even in Washington or Oregon.
I'm in Oregon, yeah.
Oh, you are?
I'm originally from Nebraska, but lived in Oregon for about the past 5 years in Portland with my wife, Tasha.
Nice. I don't think I've met your wife before, but I've met you a couple times. And then...
Yeah, I've introduced you.
Yeah. So tell us a little about yourself. I know, you know, like you said, you're from Nebraska. You've got your wife over there in Oregon. But tell us a little more about yourself, kind of your background.
Sure. So you probably want like the obstacle course race relevant answer. So I grew up in Nebraska, south central part of the state, town called Hastings. Birthplace of Kool-Aid, what? And I did honestly like every single activity, even outside of sports, through middle school. And my end goal, I don't know how I made such a mature decision as like a junior high kid, but at that time, I'd already decided that I was going to end up focusing on one thing and be really good at it. I come from a football family. My dad and my younger brother played college quarterback, so I thought it would always end up being a football thing that I ended up focusing on.
But yeah.
As I kind of slowly whittled down my activities to what I was best at and what I enjoyed the most, by the time I was about halfway through high school, I was strictly running. So cross country in the fall and track and field in the spring. Focusing most specifically on the 800 meter distance, which is two laps on the track. But I raced a lot more distances than that. Was able to end up qualifying for state cross country and then state track for a couple years. And my senior year, earned a state medal in 800 and broke the 2 minute barrier, which is like a pretty good benchmark for high school runners. And that was enough to get me recruited to a small Division I university called the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Nice.
I used 1 year of my eligibility there, then transferred to an NCAA Division II school called Northwest Missouri State, where I competed for the rest of my NCAA eligibility, doing cross country in the fall, indoor track in the winter, and outdoor track in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So I graduated in 2013, kind of like took a year off. And then I started to get the itch to compete again. So in 2014, I was just kind of sort of training, but not really sure like what direction I wanted to go. I took a couple like MMA classes. I was getting into parkour, just trying to find something that would keep me active, learn how to do something cool that would help me stay fit. And I was putting my biology degree to use working in a genetics lab, and I kind of stumbled upon these Spartan Race things, and I noticed that they offered a corporate discount. So I talked to my boss, and he put together a corporate team, and actually he made the good call also of like reaching out to Spartans media people to let them know that we're planning on sending a bunch of people from that place that I work. It's called Molecular Testing Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we ended up being one of the features for the nationally televised episode on NBC. So, funny enough, my first OCR ever was a Spartan race in which I was like kind of one of the features, like had my brief interview on TV and everything. So it was an interesting level of pressure. I didn't just get to kind of like try one out and fly to the radar. It was like, boom, you're here, do your thing.
Yeah, sometimes it's better that way, though.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it was an experience because I got through that Spartan race, and after that kind of realized that, this is the thing I can do. They're fun to train for, and frankly, finding track and field races. I mean, track and field will always be my first love.
Yeah.
Finding track and field races post-collegiately, if you're not a professional, is pretty tough. There's not much community. There's a lot of flying solo. And it's hard to find races. I know it's also the course race things. they go almost year round. So I could really kind of dabble in it all seasons, which was nice because at that time with my job, you know, I was working Saturdays, so I really wasn't sure if I'd be able to catch like track meets that I might have wanted to get into.
Yeah.
Otherwise. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how I got introduced to it. I'd say, so yeah, that first one was in 2015. I didn't actually like start training specifically for it and really like know how to train for it until probably the last couple of years. And then, yeah, ever since then, I still do some track stuff here and there. I love sprinting and running fast. Like I said, that's my first true love. But obstacle course racing sure as heck isn't a bad plan B.
No, it's not. I mean, you're pretty good at it.
Thank you. I try.
I mean, because I know the terrain race that I saw you at in, sorry, in Monroe, you won.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't your first, though.
I've done maybe five terrain races now.
Yeah. Okay. Have you won them all?
No, man. I wish I was one of those guys that was like, oh, I found out about OCR and won. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that first Spartan race, I ran kind of conservatively, but I was like 31st in the open division. My first terrain race, I got my butt handed to me on the rig. Like, I don't have natural grip strength, and this is what's kind of funny is people think that I don't have a climbing background. I grew up in Nebraska, man. They're flatlanded. There's nothing to climb.
Yeah.
So I didn't even start working on grip strength until the last few years. And I literally, like, without training, I can't even hang from one arm on a bar. So I have really awful natural grip strength, and it kind of showed through for my first bunch of races. That's why I mentioned, like, you know, it took me a little bit to kind of figure out what this obstacle course racing beast was and kind of how to train for it.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, you get a lot of people, and I mean, I've seen it with a few other people that were runners first. They get into the obstacle course racing, and in between obstacles, they'll kill you. But then they'd get to the obstacles, and they didn't have that, especially Spartans that have all that upper body strength that you need, you know, where someone who's built like me, who's a little bigger, sometimes has an advantage because I'm built to lift a tire, you know, but I'm not built for speed. So it's kind of like, you know, you got to find something in the middle. And that's, I think, what you, once you've done a few, you learn on what you need to train for. You need to train to run, but at the same time, you need to train to hang, to lift, you know, so I think that's what I love about OCR. It's everything. I mean, there's so many different things. You can't just train one area. You have to train your whole body.
Yeah, so. You're exactly right. One thing I tell my athletes, I remind them that in OCR, it's not about being thoroughbred. It's about being a mule.
Yeah.
You don't have to be able to get out and clock these low 5-minute, maybe even sub 5-minute mile pace 5Ks. You just got to be able to hold a sub 10-minute mile no matter what, whether they're sending you up stuff you got to get on your hands and knees for, or if during that mile you got to throw, you know, pick up a 75-pound bucket or throw some sandbags over your shoulders. Like, you got to still be able to keep on chugging.
Yeah.
Like a pack mule.
And that's what I love about OCR. Cause I mean, that's one thing is, I mean, if you listen to the episodes, you'll learn really quick. I don't like to run. I mean, like when I was a teenager, I played baseball, I played racquetball, I played tennis, and everyone's like, well, you run in those. I'm like, yeah, for like 90 feet at a time.
Right.
You know, it's quick sprints. I was really good at that quick, like a quick sprint like you need in tennis or racquetball or, you know, baseball, where I needed that sprint for 90 feet. But after that, I was garbage. You know, I wasn't a runner.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until I got older and when I gained a bunch of weight and the first time when I lost it all that I started running. And that was kind of one of those things. And even then, it wasn't something I really enjoyed, but it was a means to an end. And then it was OCR is what I really found where I loved it, because I could run for that short period of time. Sometimes that short period's a mile to 2 miles, but still, then I got an obstacle that I got to figure out. And that's what I...
Right. It's almost like it tricks you into forgetting about the running part, because you're still trying to get to the next obstacle.
Exactly. And that's what I love about it is, I mean, it's the obstacles are what's fun for me. I mean, I'm always, for whatever reason, even being a big guy, monkey bars, I can kill them almost every time. And I don't...
Nice.
I've never understood why I can, I mean, because I'll be honest, I'm 250. So, and And for whatever reason, monkey bars, even the terrain race, I was able to get across those. And I still don't know how I did it. But then any other... And then any other... But any other, like, upper body ones, like rope climb, I can't do for nothing. You know, the rig, I can't do. Twister, I can't do. But for whatever reason, the monkey bars is, like, my wheelhouse. So...
Funky.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that, you know, it's... I've got to figure out why and then figure out how I can work on that. Because apparently I have the grip strength for the monkey bars, but not for the others. So I've got to figure out why that is. And one, I need to lose the weight, but that's coming.
Yeah. Well, dude, we can talk after this. You know, using the resources, if you're ever wondering what to do, I can, you know, give you some pointers and stuff of what I think would help you out. Because like you said, if you can get across the monkey bars, the grip strength is there.
Yeah. Yeah, for what, like I said, for whatever reason, the monkey bars, that's, I can do that one every time. But it's the restroom, the rings, everything else, for some reason, I have issues on those, and I've never figured out completely why. I don't know if it's a mental thing that I keep telling myself I can't, and that's why I don't, or what, but it's weird. But that's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. You brought it up there for a minute, is your training. I mean, you do training. That's kind of what you do. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I own... my business called Portland Outdoor Athletics, mobile personal training for people that want to be outside. I have an 8-mile radius that I operate within that covers most of Portland, and I go mobile, drive my car to meet athletes, really at the place of their preference. We have some key sites like Dunaway Track is very popular, probably the most popular training site we have. But kind of depending on the athlete's goal and what level of convenience they need, I might either meet them outside their homes or even intercept them on their commute home from work to conduct their personal training session.
That's really cool. I mean, and that's cool. I mean, it's great. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things that people have issues with personal training is the convenience, you know?
Yeah.
It's trying to get to the gym and... all of that stuff. And but if you have someone like you that will actually come out and say, hey, we're going to meet here, that's convenient, then all of a sudden it changes everything.
Yeah, and that's the hope, at least. I try to bring, you know, an unrivaled level of convenience to the table that really works with life. So, you know, I offer easy convenient rescheduling too, and I make sure that I'm very accessible to the point where I actually limit how many athletes I work with, so that they can all get the individual attention I think they deserve, and that I can be as accessible to them as possible. So, yeah, typical American works a 9-to-5, maybe has kids, and, you know, maybe a side hustle job, but everyone's busy in their own right. So,
yeah,
just the commute to and from the gym already takes a bunch of time. And then, you know, there's no telling that once you get to the gym, there's not going to be a class taking up the space you wanted to use, or, you know, someone else using your piece of equipment. So there's different factors. Not saying that gyms don't have their place. I think they are a great tool that can be used. But for myself, I find working outside in the great outdoors and just taking advantage of some of the many amazing public parks and playgrounds that Portland has to offer, work as more functional training ground.
I could see that. I agree. I know I've read I think it's Spartan Up that talks about that, using the outside, using, you know, if you need to lift something, go find a rock. I mean, you know, use a tire. And I mean, really, most Spartan races, that's what they are. I mean, a lot of the stuff you're lifting is just stuff that's there, you know. And
I think because of most of the athletic competitions that I participate in nowadays, I do diversify, but most of the stuff I compete in is OCR related.
Yeah.
So people kind of look at me as strictly an OCR guy, and it's like, you know, the whole training outside thing, it works for other people. I've worked with, you know, a power lifter, trained people for American Ninja Warrior, you know, half marathons. We can still do things, you know, outside that isn't necessarily OCR related. You know, sandbag work is great, super functional. They're basically like, you're a big barbell junkie, you're familiar with the Olympic style lifts, and we can convert all those movements to sandbag. And what's nice about being outdoors is we can really kind of beat up the equipment and use our space, you know. One thing that a gym will never have is a hill. And yeah, they have like Jacob's ladders, they have step mills and stair masters and all that, but you can't adjust the Stairmaster on the fly or max it out. Or it's just not the same as being able to run a hill and react to the footing of a trail. And I can incorporate hill work into my athlete sessions. And I'm a firm believer in, honestly, like, no matter what you're training for, if it's at all athletic, it can benefit from certain kinds of hill work. So,
oh, I agree.
I can hit the hills. Mm-hmm. I can get out the, you know, lots of, about sandbags, it's like a gym's not going to let you just chuck around sandbags, even if they are kind of specifically meant for beating up, because they don't want to risk splitting or, you know,
making a mess.
Beating up their equipment. Whereas, like, my stuff outdoors, like, heck yeah, I challenge you, try and break my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So we can get pretty aggressive with it.
And that's good. I mean, that's. And that's one thing, you know, like I was saying, when I was running before, when I first started working out, I mean, this was back in like 2010, 2011, and started running, that was one of my biggest mistakes. I spent 6 months inside running on a treadmill and elliptical and all of that. And I mean, I dropped 70 pounds, but then one of my friends was like, let's go do a 5K. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. And I went and did a 5K on a trail, and about... I'd say about halfway through, my legs and my lower back felt like they were on fire. And I was like, what is going on? And then I talked to some trainers, and they're like, well, you spent all your time on a treadmill and elliptical, but you're even. Now, all of a sudden, you're running on a trail, and your legs are twisting to the trail. You know, the different level of the trail. You know, it's up, down, it's tilted, it's whatever. And your body's not used to it. So, yeah, and that's – you got to get outside and train. If you don't run – if you spend all your time running on a treadmill, the second you go run outside, even on a road, you're going to be in so much pain. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's this phrase that I'm always repeating to my athletes, and it's because my previous coaches have ingrained it in me. It's practice like you perform, practice like you perform.
Yeah.
If you're going to be racing on a trail surface, ideally we are training on a trail surface. And I mean, for me, that kind of ties into everything I do outdoors too, right? Like, how many Spartan races did you participate in where you're encountering moisture, whether it's raining or it's because you're covered in sweat or you're covered in mud?
Oh, every single one.
Things can get wet and slippery.
Yeah.
And you're never going to see things wet and slippery inside of a gym.
No, you're not. And I mean, that is one of the things that, you know, people forget about. I mean, you know, monkey bars, in ideally, when they're dry, are tough.
Mm-hmm.
Now let it rain. Now jump up on those monkey bars when it's pouring down rain, and now it's wet and they're slick. And now your grip strength's really tested, because not only are you trying to just hold onto the bar, you're trying to keep from sliding off the, you know, because it's wet. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And, I mean, that was Seattle this year. I don't know. Were you up here for the Super in Seattle?
I was up there for the following day. I did the sprint distance.
Okay. The sprint was wet. But the Super was like, I mean, there was one of the barbed wire crawls that we swam through.
Yeah.
It was.
So my wife, Pasha and I, I think that was one of the ones that was covered, because we were watching it online, watching the race. Kind of looking at each other like, well, I guess it's where we'll be tomorrow.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the races, and I'll be honest, it was one of the first times, like, Bender's one of my favorites. I love Bender. I mean, trying to get up and over that. And that was one of the first races where I walked up to Bender, and I had my son with me. He was 16, and it was pouring down rain. And I just looked at him. I said, no, I'm not even going to let you try this at this point. I mean, you have problems with heights, and your grip strength isn't that good, and it's wet, and I'm not taking you out of here on a stretcher. So, and you know, it comes to one of those things sometimes in OCR where you have to make that decision. It's like, you know, we should just do the burpees, because I don't think this is safe. You know, and that's kind of where I was on Bender on that day. And normally I love Bender. So.
Yeah. No, I think there's wisdom in that. A long athletic career and someone who's going to have a nice functioning body late in their life should consider such things.
Yeah.
I haven't had a specific instance like that on like a Bender, but I know there's some technical descent that I'm like, you know, I could probably risk shaving 5 seconds off if I bombed this a little extra hard, but... if I slip out, I could, like, you know, break my ankle. So if not, then I'll just try to make up those 5 seconds in a different part of the race.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's just it. And I mean, that's one thing I've talked about on other episodes, is how injury can completely change your path. You know, I mean, I don't know if you know. I mean, 2 years ago, I shattered my left foot. I mean, the second, third, fourth, and fifth metacarpals all broke, all done, right below the joint, you know, on the top of the foot. I mean, so my problem I've ran into is I have no push off on that foot really anymore. And I'm trying to fix that, but it's completely screwed up my gait. So when I try to run, I start getting horrible pain in my back, and I've been trying to deal with that for about 2 years now. And then on top of that, because I couldn't really run correctly, I've gained 40 pounds. So it's a snowball effect. And now it's kind of at this point, it's trying to turn that snowball around and fix it, you know, and get back down to the weight that I should be and be able to run on that foot. But how do you, I mean, I know you train, how do you deal with the injuries with people? Do you, I mean, I know you said you have a biology degree, but is that something that, you know, like with an injury like that, what would you suggest to try and get that foot back to and be able to run again?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you got to get your range of motion back. Most specifically dorsiflexion. So like being able to point your toe up, because climbing uphill just isn't really going to happen the way it needs to. You can't point your toe up and then take advantage of your Achilles spring.
Yeah, see, three of the toes point up, but the other two don't do nothing.
Yeah. So basically, it's kind of like this progression of damage control we can do, where people think just because they're hurt from running, they need to kind of like totally take time off. And from first-hand experience and, you know, personal observation, just seeing a lot more success with, instead of totally not using an injured part, you got to find how to gently use it. Use it enough so you encourage, you know, fresh blood flow and breaking up scar tissue that might otherwise limit your range of motion permanently.
Yeah.
Gently use it enough to, like, strengthen it, you know what I mean? But you got to walk that line of not re-injuring or further injuring.
Yeah, and that's is the hard part.
Yeah. So okay, your ankle's jacked. Well, all right, maybe we can't specifically run on trails. Let's seek out something flat. Okay, well, maybe the impact of paved surfaces isn't working for you. You know, two golden places that I think everyone listening should take advantage of that are, they're like runner's best kept secrets in Portland, but they're not even secrets. It's just people don't use them as tools like they should, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The sandy beaches at Kelly Point Park, and the Woodchip Trail at Glendevere Golf Course. These are two public places where you can get plenty of mileage on nice, soft, cushy surfaces. So good for coming back from injury, and also, frankly, like some foot strengthening. But, okay, let's say even those aren't options. Any kind of running is jacking you up. Then I send you, you know, one of my favorite homework assignments for my athletes. Let's do some biking, right? Hop on the bike, and I'm going to give you, you know, like maybe a goal target for like heart rate range and like revolutions per minute so that it best mimics running. Or pool. The pool should be the really injured athlete's number one friend, because the high resistance of water is such that you kind of have to try to hurt yourself in a pool.
Yeah.
And if you do it correct, where you convert your workouts to time, you can really maintain an almost astonishing level of running fitness in the pool. I've literally seen, you know, this girl in high school, she ran two cross country meets of the entire year. She was so injured, she had to spend, you know, all the rest of the month of training strictly in a pool. This girl was just spending the whole season in a pool for a sport that requires being out of a pool.
Yeah.
Then the only two meets she ran of the year were districts, which qualify you for state, and then state, and she won state. And it's like, her running form wasn't specifically that great, but her motor, you know, her lungs, her heart, all that was just, like, tip-top thanks to the pool. So, yeah, there are alternatives. Bike, pool, hike, rowing machine, you know what I mean? There are cardio alternatives to where you can kind of work your engine in a very similar way, but just kind of sacrifice specifically the running motion until your body is ready for that again.
See, and I love that, because that was my mistake. And I mean, that's one thing I've mentioned it multiple times on the podcast, is I made the mental mistake of, well, I'm injured, I might as well sit on the couch and eat some potato chips. And that was, but that's a normal, unfortunately, it's a normal thought process. You know, it's like, well, yeah. I'm injured. I can't do anything, so I might as well sit on the couch and do nothing.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, not to call you out, man. That is exactly where everyone takes it. Until you have a coach or someone else kind of basically make you aware of these alternatives to where it's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm not worried about this little body part being hurt because I got the whole rest of my body I can work and I can even address what is injured in a different way, kind of.
Yeah. And that's just it. And I mean, you know, and like I said, I mean, I know what my mistake was and I knew better because I mean, it's not my first rodeo. I mean, I blew my knee the first time when I was in junior high and it was one of those things when I blew my knee, I still trained and I kept going because I was in martial arts and that was what I was all about. But I made the mistake of coming back too fast. You know, I kept training in other ways to keep my body going. But then I came back too quick and ended up re-injuring my knee almost immediately and like being out for another year because of it, you know, and that was.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's where a lot of people fear is they make the mistake of, well, I'm good. It feels great. I'm going to go for it. And it's like, no, you probably still should wait. The second it feels great, you probably still need to wait a little bit. And that was my mistake because I thought, you know, I was 16 years old, thought I felt great. And I did a 360 spin and landed and my knee went, nope, it's not good. And yeah, you know, and it's like 6 months after blowing my knee out the first time. So it was kind of like, yeah, I probably should have waited another 6 months, but you know.
Yeah. But it makes you feel any better. Honestly, I think this is just like the world of being a competitive athlete. Injuries are unfortunately part of the game. And I don't know anyone who's competing at a high level that doesn't have their own personal story of trying to come back too early from an injury and making what should have been maybe a few days turn into a few months.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes that's the way the ideal athlete coach relationship works is you just have these certain kinds of mindsets, these people that are really hard chargers, and if left to their own devices, they will just be constantly alternating between injured, get back just enough to re-injure themselves. They'll kind of be like spinning in this vicious cycle of injury until they get connected to like the right coach that kind of holds the reins back, you know, hold the reins back just enough to keep said athlete from breaking themselves, but not so much that you, don't let them like open their stride and fly and still compete hard. And yeah, sometimes that coach athlete balance is just that. The athlete doesn't need motivation. If anything, they just need to be controlled and like have their energy most effectively focused and the intensity is determined for them lest they go crazy and try to just go, you know, ball to the wall super hard every single day.
Yeah. And see, that's one of the things, I mean, honestly, where were you like 8 years ago when I blew my knee last time? But because that was my mistake. And I mean, that's the thing is, I mean, that's what I've mentioned on the podcast is I lost, you know, I was down under 200 pounds. I was about 190 or so, which for me was pretty good. And because before when I started, I was almost 280, 290, and I dropped down to like 190. So, and I was running, I was doing great. And I was doing the Portland Rock and Roll Half Marathon, and it was the first year they did it. So I think it was like 2012. And something tweaked in my knee while I was running. But I finished, and I'm like, okay, I'm good. But then I wanted that special medal you got for doing both Seattle and Portland in the same year.
Yep.
Seattle was 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
So I went and did Seattle, and about halfway through, I was coming down one of the downhills, and my knee popped bad, like to enough that I dropped. And I was like, okay, that wasn't good. But I looked at my running partner. I'm like, I should be fine. I'm going to keep going. So I ran another, you know, 6.5 or so miles. And by the end of the race, I mean, it was like every other step, my knee was trying to give out. So it was toast. And my doctor's looking at me going, if you would have stopped when it popped the first time, you probably would have had a couple months of physical therapy and everything else, and you would have been fine. But because you're pig-headed and kept going, you're looking at like a year of physical therapy and everything else. And by the time my knee was healed, I had gained back 40 pounds and I'm like, this is stupid. I don't want to do it anymore. And that's where I lost all my motivation and then started getting back into it. And then I broke the foot and injuries take a toll, but having a coach like you that would have been there that said, hey, cool, you're injured. Let's work on this instead would have been, you know, an amazing thing.
Yeah, I mean, one nice thing I will say, too, about, like, you know, the world of obstacle course racing being so, I say, multifaceted, you know, test so many different kinds of athleticism and still full body. It really is super easy to just shift your focus. Like, it'd be different if you were training specifically for a marathon. I mean, when you agree to seriously pursue the marathon, you're signing up to be a one-trick pony. Basically, yeah. Your world is just counting miles and, you know, building your aerobic machine, building up this ridiculous aerobic base. And at that point, if you get, like, hurt, if you pull in a running injury from that, yeah, it is more difficult to shift focus. But obstacle course racing, so on top of it, that, yeah, it's very, very easy to just be like, I have every single body part being used, whatever is injured, now, you know, say I jacked my left hand up, let's say, okay, well, all the time and energy I was focusing towards working things that include my left hand, now that time and intensity has just shifted elsewhere temporarily until left hand's ready to jump back on board, you know?
Yeah.
It really doesn't have to be like this thing that crippled your season. I should leave room for concessions. There are going to be some times where, like, if you're anemic, you know, sometimes you just got to, like, yeah, kick back. But I think the vast majority of the time, the answer isn't just kind of throwing in the towel and tapping out for a while. I think there's lots of things we can be doing. It just takes a little bit of awareness and maybe some creativity.
Yeah, and that's what's awesome is, I mean, it's just not throwing in the towel, and that was my mistake. And I mean, I look back now, but they say, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But now it's like, you know, I realize what I did, and I realize what I need to do, and I need to do something to better myself. I mean, I did do a marathon in November because, well, I'm dumb, but it's one of those things, and I say it in jest, but at the same time, it's like I would not tell anybody to do what I did. I told myself. When I was still, before I blew my knee, that before my 40th birthday, I would do a full marathon. My 40th birthday was December 2nd of last year. The Seattle Marathon was 6 days prior to that. So that was my last chance to do it. And it's like, well, I'm not in any shape to do this. I really probably shouldn't be out there and doing it. But I told myself I would do it before I was 40. So I'm doing it anyway. And it was... I mean, I'll be honest. It was 9.5 hours of hell because I was not prepared for it. I wasn't ready for it, you know, and a lot of people have asked me, what would you do for your next one? And I'm like, train. That's about all I could say. I would train for it. You know, I wasn't trained. I wasn't ready. It was just one of those things. It came down to just being stubborn. I was stubborn enough to say, I'm going to go do 26.2 miles and that's it, you know, and did I finish it? Yes. But I still would not tell somebody else to do what I did. I would be like, train, get ready for it, do it the correct way. I do want to. I keep telling everyone I'm never going to do another one, which is probably a lie. I do want to train and actually do one and do it correctly. You know, not just grudgingly along going and just, you know, it was pure willpower by the time I finished. There was nothing athletic about it. It was pure willpower to just not say I'm done, I'm quitting. It was just to keep putting one foot in front of the other. By the end, there was my left ankle was locked. It wouldn't even move by the end of the race. So, I mean, if you ever see the video of me finishing the race, I'm running really weird because my left ankle literally had like just stuck and I couldn't bend it. And man. I'm just like, nope, I'm still going. And it was, I would never tell anybody to do it the way I did it.
I feel like I could probably feel a whole separate podcast of reasons why I think the vast majority of people that are in pursuit of running a marathon should not do it. But I'm glad it didn't leave you permanently crippled. I mean, most people don't realize there's a reason that the first person in recorded history to complete running that distance is a well-trained foot soldier who died from oxygen death after completing the feat. Like, this is something that literally exhausts every energy reserve in your body. It's going to be a hell ride, even if you're perfectly suited for it and perfectly well prepared for it. So, folks that are listening, I do a half marathon. If you want to test your endurance capacity, honestly, even a 5K is like a road race 5K. It's going to be upwards of 95%+ endurance component. So you can test your endurance in different ways. It's a very amateur mindset to think that longer means harder. Frankly, like any half fit body can log out a marathon. I find it much more impressive to run a shorter distance at a more quality pace.
Exactly.
For, you know, some people always just, they're looking for bragging rights. They want to be able to say they ran a marathon. Okay, whatever. I'll tell you, for me, I will never run a marathon. I have zero interest in doing it. But yeah, like there are ways of testing your endurance that are, they're just healthier, you know, longevity wise.
Oh yeah.
So many factors come into being ready for a good marathon. So I think a half marathon is a great distance for everybody. I think every single body type can train up for a half marathon. But a full marathon, I mean, at some point we got to draw the line somewhere. Because because 26.2 miles is like the coolest thing to do right now, so everyone wants to do it. Well, okay, what if the marathon distance just so happened to be 54.6 miles, are you now going to run 54.6 miles? Like,
yeah.
You know, there has to be an end somewhere. So, but that's kind of my two cents on the whole thing.
Oh, there has to be. But I mean, and there's like the ultra marathoners out there and all that stuff. And I mean, they're crazy. But for me, like I said, and I mean, you know, I've admitted it repeatedly that my way of doing that marathon wasn't right, but it was something in my brain. I told myself I would do it, and I just felt I had to because I said I would. But
yeah,
it wasn't, you know, like I said, I would never tell anybody to do it the way I did. For one, my training wasn't there, but I did it, and it was just pure willpower by the end. There was no physical anything about it. I could barely move. I could barely walk. I mean, I had, you know, people that worked for the marathon that were following me the whole time to make sure I was still okay. But it was just pure pain at that point. And I mean, by the end, it was just, my body wasn't, you know, at the end, my body's telling me, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have done this. But it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm already past 20 miles, so there's no quitting now, you know. But
yeah,
I mean,
you made it through the wall. Props to you for having the, you know, fire in your belly and the grit to finish. That is very impressive. You came in hot on the marathon and survived until the tail. Yeah.
It was, yeah. I mean, like I said, but I would, anybody else that said they were going to do it, I'd be looking at me, you're stupid. I know it sounds bad to say it that way, but it's just like, I guess stupid isn't the right word, but train, wait. You know, if I would have been smart, I would have said, you know, I may not get it by 40. Let's go for 42 and let's train and get my body into the right shape to do this. You know, let's figure out my gait issue and get my run down right, you know, so that I don't end up doing like I did where my ankle locked. Like I said, I mean, it was probably the last 2 miles. I couldn't even bend my ankle because it just, like, every bit of my ankle locked up. And it's just like,
yeah,
you know, if I could go back, I think I would tell myself, wait till you're 42 and, you know, train and get to where you should be. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. You know, none of us are professional athletes, so we can't afford to, you know, put ourselves in a position where your ankle's locked up for a couple weeks and, you know, you have your team of doctors and masseuses and physical therapists taking care of you. No, it's like your ankle locks up, you still got to play dad and go to work, you know, the next week. And also, honestly, like, miss out on follow-on race opportunities because you're healing up still. So, I'd say, you know, people that are on the fence of whether or not they want to do a marathon, don't let me make a decision for you, but I just really want you to be aware of what you're signing up for. Because there can be more lasting effects than what you realize if you're just in pursuit of bragging rights and a new Facebook profile pic, you know. You could do a half marathon instead and get tons of the same fitness gains. I mean, honestly, like, half marathon and full marathon training are, like, basically the exact same thing. But also, maybe you could run a half marathon and get in 3 OCRs over a 4-month period instead of be stubborn and do a marathon, and that's all you're doing for a 4-month period because they jack you up so bad.
Yeah, and that was kind of one of the things, too, why I, you know, and a lot of people kind of wondered why I went for Seattle in November. And I'm like, I know it's going to be rainy and nasty, but I have no OCRs planned until April. So, I mean, I have like 3 months, or not actually March, because I usually do Vegas, but, you know, for like 3 months. So if for whatever reason afterwards I need that time to recover, I got it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of planning. But so let's pause for a minute and have a commercial, and then we'll come back from commercial and talk some more.
All right, sounds good.
Grays Harbor Unders makes the performance-based layer clothing you want and need. Whether you work, hunt, hike, fish, run, or ride in the great outdoors, if you work up a sweat, Grays Harbor Unders are for you because their unique dual-layer fabric removes moisture from your body and keeps your skin dry, even when the outer layer is completely wet. It's a base layer like no other. Get you some at ghunders.com. That's ghunders.com for the best performance-based layer you'll ever wear.
All right, we're back from commercial. So we've been talking about the marathon and kind of the correct training for that and all that stuff. How do you, I mean, I know you do the OCRs. What do you think is the best kind of training for an OCR? How, if I was to come to you right now and I'd never done an OCR and you've seen me before, you know what my body type is. What would you tell me?
I'd say basically OCR is cross-country running with climbing related obstacles and heavy carries mixed in. Those are broad strokes, but generally speaking, if you train for those things, it's going to cover all your bases. At the heart of obstacle course racing, it's still a race. You're still trying to get from point A to point B in the fastest way possible. They're just time consuming and very energy consuming obstacles in between.
Yeah.
If you kept splits on your race, well, this isn't inside everyone, depending on how you race, but the people that are running these things, they're spending more time traveling between obstacles than they are on the obstacles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Technically, like American Ninja Warrior falls into the category of obstacle course or anything, so that would be an example of where, no, like, basically your entire competition is an obstacle, but...
Yeah.
In common usage, when you use the phrase obstacle course racing, you're referring to something that includes trails or off terrain, off pavement terrain, and it has the miles to count throughout. At the heart of it is cross country racing, and that's going to be time wise the majority of what you're doing on course.
Yeah.
And anyone that's ran cross country before knows that basically means you got to learn to love hills, especially because some of the course directors, especially like, you know, Spartan Race, we keep bringing that up because they're kind of the top dogs in the game right now. They're really good about finding like cross country on steroids, you know, specifically speaking out. The most wicked things they can find where literally you need to get down on all fours at some points, or like they might even be freaking sending you up a ski slope during the off season.
Yeah, and they do that. There are some of their courses that are like that. I mean, if you've ever done Montana, the Montana Spartan, that's where I my very first Spartan was the Montana Beast in 15, the Founders Race. And I never understood hills until I did that. And it's brutal. I mean, it kills you. I mean, going up and down those hills. And honestly, for someone like me, and people are surprised because I've blown both of my knees at different points in my life, so they're not 100%. It's the downhill that hurts.
Yep.
It's not uphill. Oh, yeah. Uphill is hard on the muscles, but downhill is hard on my knees. You know, and that's just, it's brutal.
That's literally exactly what I think. Word sounded differently, but yeah, I fully agree. If you really had to pin me down, I mean, it's super dangerous for me to say if there's like you do this one thing and you're ready for LCR. No.
No.
But if you were like, hey, I have no freaking idea what I'm doing, what's the one thing I should do? I'd be like, find a hilly trail to run on. And besides running on that, like farmer's carry. Farmer's carry is kind of like the one way you can be both preparing yourself for heavy carry, you know, getting your legs used to pushing under added resistance, while simultaneously building up some of the grip strength that's going to be required for traversing through rigs and whatnot. That should definitely not be where you stop. That's not the end goal.
No.
Like a snapshot, if someone was like, give me a workout that is kind of like an OCR, that's the easiest way. I'd be like, you know, grab a couple kettlebells, a couple dumbbells, basically something that's heavy that taxes your grip.
And climb hill.
Take it for the march. And alternate those marches with Philly Trail Run. That's the deal.
Yeah, and that is kind of true. I mean, it was one of those things for me. I mean, I've said it before, is I did half marathons. I did all that, you know, when I was losing weight and I lost all the weight. And then after I did a Gladiator during that time before I got hurt. And then I got hurt. And when I came back, I did like Hell Run, which is no longer around, Survivor, Mud Factor, a bunch of those smaller runs. Mm-hmm. And then someone told me about Spartan and I earned a free race at Washougal, but I couldn't run because I was injured. I had a cut on my hand where there was 15 stitches in my hand. So I'm like, well, I can't run, but I went with some friends and I'm like, I'll just volunteer and get my free race. And so I did that at Washougal in 2014. And then I'm like, well, where's the next race? Let's go to Montana. Nobody told me that there was difference in the races. Nobody told me that there was a beast and a sprint and whatever. I'm just like, oh, there's a race in Montana. Let's go do that one. Let's do Saturday because I want to drive back on Sunday. Yep. Not realizing that Saturday was a beast and what a beast was, you know, and just signed up and did it. I'm like, oh, let's go. And I went by myself, no friends, no nothing, and just went. And I ended up running into two beasts on the trail. I was part of the Beast OCR group on Facebook, but I'd never met anybody. And I met two guys on the trail, and it was one of those things that we both said at different times that we saved each other because I was about ready to quit. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done, and I don't want to do it anymore. And then I ran into them, and then it kind of became one of those, well, I'm going to keep him going, so I better keep going. And, you know, we finished, but it was brutal. And I was not ready. I think if somebody would have came to me and said, this is what a Spartan is, I would have looked at him and said, you're an idiot. I ain't doing that.
Yeah.
And I think it helped the fact that I had no idea what I was walking into. And I mean, come to find out later that not only did I pick a beast, I picked a founder's beast, which was even worse. So, I mean, when I saw mile marker 17, I wanted to find whoever like built this course and kick him in the jimmy. But I mean, I think that course ended up being almost 19 miles that year. It was brutal. And that's how I started. And it was one of those that I think that's what kept me going, though, was I started with that one. So then it was like, well, I started with a beast. I might as well do the super and sprint. And then every year it's like I found the worst one. So why not do the others? You know, and, you know, 2015, I got a trifecta. And then 2016, I, even with a broken foot, I got double because I did I did Hawaii in a boot because, well, as I've stated before, I'm dumb, but I did have doctor's approval. The doctor said I could do it as long as I never landed on that foot. I could do whatever I wanted. He's like, just don't land on the foot. You can walk on it. You can do whatever you want. Just don't land on it, you know, because I had the full boot on.
So he said you can do a Spartan race in a boot as long as you never land on one foot. Which tells me your doctor has no idea what the Spartan race is.
Yeah, pretty much. He just said I couldn't land on that foot. I could land on the right foot. I just couldn't land on my left. He's like, just keep the boot on and don't land on that foot. And I'm like, okay, cool, dude. So, and then, you know, last year I got a triple trifecta and I'm going for triple again this year. So it just kind of, it's grown as it went. And I mean, it's kind of, I always feel one of those, I need to lose the weight, but at the same time, I feel kind of like, I hope I inspire some people to say, hey, you know, people are like, I'm not in the right shape. I'm like, look at me. I did triple trifecta last year. I'm not in any shape. But on the same side of that, I don't want it to be like, hey, look, I'm a fat guy still doing this. I want it to be like, hey, I did this even though I was big. But at the same time, I'm trying to get healthy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. We should all be moving towards better versions of ourselves, you know? Like,
yes.
Trying to maximize potential is a big thing with me. And when people can just learn to fall in love with the daily grind of trying to, like, maximize their potential. Because, I mean, trying to make a better version of yourself every day, that, frankly, that isn't really realistic. At some point, we're all going to be getting old.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not going to be able to move at age 70 like I could when I was age 50. Assuming I even make it to that age, you know? So,
yeah,
every day, just, like, finding love with trying to maximize your potential and make the most of it. Like, that's the ride. That's what's fun. That's what's cool. Yeah, I think that's key.
And it is. I mean, it's maximized the potential. And that's kind of my, you know, I've told everyone this year, 2018 to me has been my year of no excuses. It's like, I've had excuses the last couple of years, you know. In 2016, I shattered my foot. You know, 2017, I was still dealing with that. And then I quit smoking, which my own fault, I quit smoking. And then I started like eating like a fish. I mean, it was just wasn't good. So I made excuses for myself, you know, and that's the big key, was coming to the point that I understood that, yes, I had excuses in 2016 and 2017, but I made those excuses. There was ways to do what I needed to do, even though I had the injury. And even though, I, you know, quitting smoking is not an excuse to gain weight. It's, I used that as an excuse. So my goal in 2018 was supposed to be my year of no excuses. I need to fix, or not fix, to better myself physically and mentally, and not use excuses to just do it, you know. And that's been the big key for me. You know, it's like right now, I mean, I'm basically, as of tomorrow, I'll be 2 weeks out from having surgery because I had a I had an umbilical hernia. So I had that fixed. And, you know, when I did terrain, I actually had it. It was my last race I could do before I had surgery. So I have 4 weeks where I can't lift anything over 20 pounds. But then it's like, I asked my doctor, I'm like, can I run? He's like, yep, you can do anything cardio. You can do, he's like, the only thing I would say, don't lift anything over 20 pounds and don't do crunches or anything like that. Because, you know, you have an injury basically to your stomach because I just cut it open. So, and that's kind of the thing is I've been trying to do is find ways to still do it. It's like, okay, cool. I can't do this, but can I do this? And that's, you know, kind of the thing that's been great about, you know, like this episode we've really talked about. It's okay, you have an injury to, you know, like you said earlier, you have an injury to your left hand. Well, an injury to your left hand doesn't mean you can't run, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Or an injury to your foot doesn't mean you can't do push-ups, doesn't mean you can't do crunches. I mean, there's still stuff you can do no matter what injury you have. It's just finding a way to work around it.
Yeah, man, there are always options. I'm flashing back right now to the personal example. Some of those people out there listening might kind of know my story. I don't flaunt this one around, but basically, like, I had a big appendix thing through college where eventually my appendix went bad, but they didn't figure out that's what it was. So I went 2 months of just intense training, competing with a bad appendix.
Ooh.
And luckily, you know, it didn't rupture anything, but basically, when you spend a couple months with a bad organ that's festering inside of you that causes other problems. So, anyways, I had an emergency appendectomy, and in recovering from that, it was one of those things. It's like, you know, I can't do much. When I sneeze, I feel like someone just took a katana to my liver. So,
yeah,
like there, you can't. Yeah, but I would. I lived with my college teammates at the time, and they would find me. They give you this little breathing apparatus where you basically like practice sucking in really hard and blowing out really hard.
Mm-hmm.
To build your diaphragm up. And anyone who's had an appendectomy knows what I'm talking about. And I would make a circuit where I would do that and then grip strength work and calf raises and then hold my breath, because those were the only things I could do that wouldn't, you know, send shearing pain through my midsection that would risk furthering my injury. So this isn't tooting my own horn, but just letting you know, like, even in that pretty pathetic state, I still found a way to, like, kick up my heart rate. Even if it was kind of dumb, weird stuff that doesn't really directly translate to any competition, I would still be able to burn some calories and kind of scratch my daily itch of needing a workout.
Yeah.
Until follow-on healing occurred.
Yeah, and that's just what it's all about, is, I mean, finding some way to continue getting better, you know, and to continue your workout and do everything else, and that's just it. I mean, that's awesome that you found a way, even with, like, an appendix, you know, an appendectomy, to still, you know, raise your heart rate and do all that stuff. And that's, like I said, I think the biggest problem you run into is, you know, you get people that have the same mindset that I did, where it's like, oh, foot's messed up, better sit on the couch and eat some potato chips. It's like everything goes out the window. You know, it's not even just it's not even just not working out. Now the diet, you know, well, I can't work out. Who cares about the diet? Might as well eat potato chips. And it sounds horrible, but that's just kind of the mentality you run into, is, oh, well, can't do one of it, so the whole thing's shot. And that's not the way it should be. It should be, oh, well, my foot's hurt, I better keep up. This is when I should work harder at my diet, you know, and what I'm putting into my body. And let's see what workouts I can do that don't involve my foot. you know, and that's,
And personally for me, this might be a good tool for other people to use. I found I can guilt myself into some positivity or like some good words, you know, every time I might start feeling sorry for myself and, you know, have something going on where it actually could serve as a legitimate excuse for sitting out, like, hey, my appendix is jacked up or whatever. You know, you hear those stories of athletes that overcome something far greater. And then it's kind of like, man, I'm a piece of crap. Like, if they can get through that, I can at least get my, you know, sorry lady butt up and do something. I found, like, you know, every great athlete, I think that's kind of the assumption made that the things would happen for them. And that, from my experience, that's just not the case at all. Like, all of them have these really inspiring stories where it's like, you know, damn, you came back from that and did what? So you hear that kind of stuff and you're exposed to it. And then it's just a given. It's like, if they can do that, I'm not them, but I can at least do this, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of rubs off on you. And it is, I say, there is some guilt and shame in there. Like, man, I kind of suck for, like, thinking that was a good excuse. And but you don't use it, you know? And as long as the end goal, the end result is that, like, you're moving forward, I think that a little bit of guilt, a little bit of shame can actually be a pretty effective tool if properly applied. You can even, like I said, self-apply them, you know? Look up on YouTube, Google. I know everyone who's listening to this has access to the internet. Look up some motivating stories, and honestly, they might even make you feel like a little, kind of like a piece of crap just for, like, a second. And as long as that helps you get out the door and get moving, I'm okay with that.
Oh yeah, I agree. And I mean, I'll be one of those ones, and I'll be honest that I've kind of felt like against people that are athletes, like, all their lives, kind of, I guess I'm trying to think of the word, you know, I've given them a raw deal, I think, because most time I like talking to people who have been overweight or gone, had a drug addiction or something. They had something that they came back from. And I think you run into a lot of times a prejudice of people look at someone, well, he's been an athlete his entire life. He hasn't gone through nothing. But then you talk to someone like you, and I'm talking to you, and it's, well, you know, I had an appendectomy and I did all this. And you talk to someone, and it's like, their story is just as inspirational as anybody else's. Just because someone has been an athlete all their life doesn't mean that they've haven't had to work hard to stay an athlete. And that's where I think a lot of people have an issue where they see that. And it's like, for me, I mean, I posted a picture because I've talked about it many times that I was an athlete in high school. I graduated high school at 140 pounds, you know, and I posted a picture of me, like, skinny as can be and just everything else, and I'm like, this is what I look like. And then all of a sudden I gained weight and everything else, and it's like, I want to get back to healthy. I know I'll never get down to that size. And I had someone be like, well, you should never say never. And I'm like, I don't say that because I don't think I could. I say that because I don't think it would be healthy to get back down to the size I was then. I mean, 140 pounds for me now, I don't think it's going to be healthy. But 180, 190, that would be healthy and I think would be a good weight, you know. And it's one of those, and I think back to the mindset I had back then was, you know, you kind of had this mindset when you were an athlete and a teenager, you'd look at people and you're like, well, they choose to be fat. That's their fault. Yeah, and it's a whole.
Everyone has a story, man. Yes. Everyone has examples of overcoming diversity. Just some people kind of, they keep their stories more sheltered than others.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone has stories.
Oh, they do. And it's one of those things, you know, I talked in the last episode when I was talking to Brandy about the mental side of it. And I think that's part of been one of my issues is, you know, I was that skinny guy. I was that athletic guy. I was, you know, an avid mountain biker. I mean, I'd go up into, like, the mountains and go up the ski slopes and ride mountain bikes for days. I loved it. Okay. You know, I was baseball, tennis, racquetball. I loved it all. And then I blew my knee and it all went away. And I have this mental picture now where when I'm out on a course or doing whatever, I think of myself, and I'm horrible about this, my own self-image is I see myself as the fat guy. And when I'm out on the course, I see other people looking at me and they could be looking at me thinking, wow, that is amazing. He's out here. He's doing it. He's trying to better himself. I'm so proud of him. But in my mind, I think they're thinking, what is that fat guy doing out here on the course? He should be at home on the couch. And it's horrible, but it's that mental side of, like, it's that mental side of everything where you have mentally, you know, you think of yourself in the worst possible way. And that's one of the things I'm trying to fix with myself is to think that maybe most people out there think the same way I do, where they see a bigger person on the course saying, good for them. They're out there, they're getting off the couch and they're trying to fix or, you know, better themselves and do everything else. But I'm horrible in the fact that I think, I guess a horrible isn't the best way, but I think that everyone thinks the worst of me. And I, that's a hard part, I think, for someone my size and have gone through what I have to get over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, you got to shake that. I know it's way easier said than done, but I definitely think if people are giving you looks, from my experience in the OCR community, it's definitely the latter. Like, there's inspiration in that. And also, like you said, you're out there bettering yourself. You're in pursuit of a solution. Basically, you're in pursuit of a solution to a visible problem, you know what I mean? I can remember this personally, honestly, from the opposite side. Like, I almost don't want to use the word skinny shaming, but, like, you know, there's fat shaming, there's skinny shaming, too. And I was a scrawny little puny, like, barely over 100 pounds freshman. I was just a tiny kid for a lot of my life. I was the runt. And I was, like, always wanting to be bigger and stronger, and I just wasn't. And I remember, you know, I had a badass strength and conditioning coach that I was really fortunate to work under through high school. He's a linebacker for Kansas State University and just, like, super hardcore. Like, had a very military presence, like, different colored eyes and this stare that would just make you melt. If you got in trouble. And that hard-ass guy, he ran a super tight ship in his weight room, but he's super effective. And I felt like I didn't belong in there because I was just this, like, scrawny kid who's fighting to bench the bar. And, but then, you know, the one lecture he said that just always stuck out to me, and I know he worded it differently, but he was basically like, this is where people belong. You know, if you're, like, small, if you're, like, tiny, and you want to add some bulk, you want to get stronger, what better place do you belong than here? Like, you belong here more than the bodybuilders do. Hospitals are where sick people belong. Weight rooms are where scrawny little boys that want to become men belong, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, from that point on, I still do the process. Every day I have to work at, like, you know, keeping myself confident. But it was kind of like I didn't care near as much or look around to see whether or not people were looking at me because I knew this wasn't the version of me that was going to stay. I was working on a better version that we all couldn't see yet, but it was coming. And just having that foresight and that long-term view, I think, is important. So I think you're good, man. I'm proud of you. You're out there. You're getting on the course and you're asking the right questions that imply that your mentality is in the right place and you're heading in the right direction. So you just keep doing your thing, man. I don't think anyone's doing the fat guy thing. And if they are, they suck. So,
well, thank you.
Some people are going to be miserable like that.
Yeah, there are people like that. So, well, thank you. I'm trying to get better and I'm going to get better.
Yeah.
It's going to be. Yeah. So, well, we've been talking for a little over an hour, so I think we should wrap this up a little bit. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners in closing?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, beware. There's lots of free advice out there. Unfortunately, not all of it is good. I'm not going to pretend like I have all the right answers, but one thing that I see people make a mistake of is just not being skeptical enough. Be skeptical of who's giving information, you know. Look at their background. What qualifies them for being able to give you advice? I'll just leave that at that. Also, I want to give a shout out to my sponsor, Lake Oswego Massage Therapy. They do a great job helping me recover from the crazy crap that I beat my body up with. So shout out to Brand again at Lake Oswego Massage Therapy. She's a miracle worker, and she has just recently moved to Portland. So if y'all want to work with a sports masseuse that will get as deep as you'd ever need her to, I mean, she's strong. She can beat you up. Hit me up because she is amazing and her client list is filling up fast. So if you want to be able to get on her books, feel free to reach out to me. You can do that through Instagram, Facebook. I have pages for both personal and also my business, Portland Outdoor Athletics, there. Also, you know, if you are considering personal training, I'd love to have that conversation. Like I said, I do limit how many athletes I work with, but I still do have room for take care of a couple more. So go ahead and hit me up. Visit my website, www.portlandoutdoorathletics.com. And finally, I guess I'll cast this line out there. I am currently looking for a supplement sponsor. So if you all know of anyone who wants to raise brand awareness in the obstacle course racing community, and most specifically in Portland, I think that we could talk about possibly helping each other out in a win-win business relationship. So, yeah, I think that's all my shout-out.
Perfect. And I will make sure I will get all the links to all that stuff from Taylor, and I will put them all on the BeastNet Facebook page. So if anybody's looking for those, I'll make sure they're all on there so you can get to them. And other than that, thank you, Taylor. It's been fun, and I'm sure we will have you again. I think I might use you for a I'm going to start doing a Q&A thing like once a month, and I'll probably use you as a guest on the Q&A as a, for a trainer. So.
Rock on. All right. Well, as you just found out, I can talk, so.
I know.
I'll give you whatever time limit you need. I'll put it that way.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Taylor.
All right, thanks, Mike. Peace out.
Yeah, bye.
Thanks for listening to the BeastNet podcast, brought to you by Beast OCR. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear. You can find us on Facebook or at beastocr.com.